Jeffrey, let's talk a little bit about what you do. Employment law is really important. I know your briefcase is bigger than that, but this is something that obviously so many of us have a relationship with our employers that we need to know what our rights are in a lot of these situations, and I feel like a lot of people don't. Do you feel that way too?
I do feel that way. I did see a recent statistic that about 90% of the working force works for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so these laws apply to an awful lot of workers.
Right. And I know that each state has different laws and that's difficult to navigate. And we'll try and do some of that. 312-981-7200. If you've got any questions for Jeffrey about employment law, do not slander any of your employers on the broadcast. You can be as general as speaking and, of course, never able to give 100%. You'll give your best advice, Jeffrey, or at least your thoughts on the matter from a professional perspective. But let's start with, I think, what everyone is wondering here. And I know it's something that we've talked about, but it's great having you here. We're wearing masks again, going back to work. We are vaccinated. A lot of folks are. A lot of folks aren't, though. And everyone wants to know, can employers fire you if you, A, aren't vaccinated and they want you to be, or B, you don't wear a mask in the office?
The short answer to the question, John, is yes, except in a couple of different circumstances. With respect to the vaccines, the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, has stated that laws don't prohibit employers from requiring employees to be vaccinated. Similarly, recently, Governor Pritzker entered an executive order that required all individuals to wear masks in indoor spaces. The question is, when can you be exempted from those two requirements? Mm-hmm. And in both circumstances, it's really two ways. One is if you have a medical condition that prohibits you from wearing a mask or from getting a vaccine. Or the second is if you have a disability and you can't wear the mask.
For those, you'd probably need some sort of documentation, I imagine, right?
A document from a note and an employer to review it and see if that can be accommodated. There is one other small exception. Well, it's not small. It's a large exception. And that is that an employer cannot discriminate against an employee for religious reasons. Mm-hmm. So if you have a religious objection, sincerely held belief about not taking the vaccine, then that would be one third way to avoid having to take that.
I know there's been some interesting decisions and things that pastors have even said about whether they want to offer people religious exemptions. I know Cardinal Supich said that they should not just offer it, broadly speaking, based on the Catholic religion. And that's an interesting thing. It has to be a genuinely held belief, which is probably not easy to prove, is it, Jeff?
A sincerely held religious belief is generally interpreted broadly. You know, an employer can, if they have an objective, good faith basis, ask for some supporting information to justify that religious belief. But in either case, an employer can still require vaccines if it's the case that it could cause a danger to other employees. So then the burden would shift to an employer to show that the danger outweighed the accommodation.
Did things change when Pfizer became fully FDA approved? Was there still some wiggle room because it wasn't fully FDA approved? Or did that not really weigh into too many things? Maybe that was the cover that the employer wanted to have. Okay, now that this has been approved. Did that matter in terms of legality? Has things changed because of that?
What I think happened is that legality incentivized a lot of employers to require the vaccine. The EEOC came out and said that vaccines were okay before the vaccine was approved.
Okay. Have we seen any cases where this has already been challenged?
Well, the case that I think is most familiar is the one out of Texas. And I believe it was nurses who sued. And the Supreme Court did not take the case and allowed the vaccine mandate to stay in place. And that really set the stage for everything that happened after that.
Do you anticipate more lawsuits like this? I mean, I imagine they're going to come, whether it's the masks or the vaccines.
The more that people are coming back to work, the more you're going to see people challenging those requirements.
But for the most part, it seems like it's settled law.
Well, we live in an at-will state, which means that an employer generally sets the rules of the road, and you need an exception to avoid these requirements. The exceptions are few and far between, and I think that that's what's going to rule the day.
J. Jeffrey Colwin. By the way, if anyone's stepping out of their car and they want to reach you for more information, what's the best way to get a hold of you and what you guys do at the firm?
Sure. Well, you can find me on all social media sites, or you can call me directly at 312-374-5305.
In radio, we read the number twice, so go ahead, give it out one more time.
That is 312-374-5305.
You went into a good radio voice there, Jeffrey. Nice job. We appreciate that.
It's the environment.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so get your questions in. 312-981-7200. Jeffrey's not going anywhere. He's sticking around for the entire hour. Quick break here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. So happy to be joined with Jeffrey Colwin, attorney at Colwin, Mashapinto, and Colwin, dealing with employment law and all the different areas of that here on this Labor Day weekend. Why not focus on employment, right? Jeffrey, it works perfectly. It fits the theme. And you're okay with taking a couple questions, 312-981-7200. If you got yours, he'll do his best to answer them. Let's go to Adam. Adam, you're in Chicago. What's your question, sir?
Hi. I work at a major company, and because of COVID, of course, we were forced to take pay cuts. Some persons got demoted. Some persons actually got laid off. And this is management people. So now what they're doing, we are back at pre-COVID numbers. They're calling everybody back into the office. And now they're posting those jobs. So I'm one that I was demoted, mm-hmm. took a huge pay cut. But now they're posting my job, and I guess I have to re-interview. I mean, legally, can they do that?
Did they make a promise to you that you'd have it back or something?
No promise, nothing. Because because of COVID, it was very uncertain if the company was going to even survive.
Okay, yeah.
But we've done a good job of surviving, and now I'm like, okay, like I go to HR and I said, hey, if COVID never happened, I don't have any performance issues, no attendance issues, I would still be, my previous position. So how are you posting my job and I have to interview it along with persons you can actually pay, less money?
All right. Adam, that's a great question. Jeffrey, I know you would need more specifics, obviously, that we won't get to on air. But what's your general take on this question?
Well, John, generally speaking, we live in an at-will employment state, which means that an employer can fire or demote an employee for any reason at all, as long as it's not an illegal reason. So in this case, if the employer had a legitimate reason for the demotion...
Like COVID is a legitimate reason, yeah.
Likely so. And if the employer had legitimate reasons for posting the job or interviewing other people, it would be difficult to argue that they had an obligation to take an employee back.
What would be some of those illegal reasons that you mentioned there?
Sure. Well, it's illegal for an employer to take an employment action because somebody's race or sex or national origin. It would be illegal for an employer to take an adverse action because an employee exercised one of their legal rights, such as filing a claim for workers' compensation or reporting illegal discrimination or whistleblowing.
Mm. Adam, that doesn't sound like great news for you unless you feel like in one of those subsequent illegal areas it was for you. But I hope that helped answer your question, my friend.
No, it does. Just a little bit further. So if I could prove that it was one of those protected classes, then I would have a case, correct?
Adam?
Yes, if you could show that was the employer's motivation for taking the action, then that would be something I would consider calling an employment lawyer
about. How hard is that? It's got to be somewhat hard to prove, right?
Proving intentional discrimination is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah. Well, Adam, I think you need to write down this number, 312-374-5305. I'll mention it a few more times because I'm sorry that happened to you, my friend. Thanks for calling in, though. Okay, Adam?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, I bet that is, I think a lot of people feel like, look, it's like one of the worst things to happen to you emotionally, professionally. You think you're moving along in your career. You don't understand the motivation of your boss. But just because you feel hurt, and I've been there too, doesn't mean you have a legal case as much as you may want. And not saying that Adam doesn't for one of those other reasons. Do you find that sometimes that people call you and they're just like, help me out, just because they're desperate? And why wouldn't they be?
I think one of the hardest things to explain to employees is that under the law, a termination that is unfair or unjustified is not always illegal.
Yeah, I hear that too. 312-981-7200 to get on the phone lines to ask Jeffrey any other questions. Please do so. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. In fact, we're getting one right now from John. John is in Lincoln Square. And John, I think you're asking a little bit more about the vaccination thing. Go ahead, John.
Well, thank you. I wanted to ask if I work in an office where masks are required, if you're not vaccinated, is it legal to, if someone walks into my office, to ask if they're vaccinated if they have no mask on or not?
So like just a customer walks in or a client or something?
Someone, it would be an employee, another employee within the company.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I got this correct. So there's not a rule that you have to be vaccinated. There's just a rule that if you aren't, you must wear a mask. And in that case, you're asking, can other employees ask about your vaccination status at work?
If they are, correct, if they do, say, walk into my office or someone's office without a mask on, are you legally able to ask them if they're vaccinated?
Ah, I see what you're asking. Ooh, that's an interesting one, Jeffrey.
It's kind of a tricky one, then.
Yeah, it is a little tricky. What are your thoughts, Jeffrey?
Well, in our society, it's a very touchy subject to ask people about their medical conditions. Most people know and are familiar with the law HIPAA, which protects medical information only under certain circumstances. And I don't believe HIPAA would apply in that circumstance. So it probably would be okay as long as you don't violate an employer's policies. That being said, I would be very sensitive about asking somebody about their medical situation.
Yeah, and they aren't under the obligation to answer it unless it's HR. I don't really know, because that is an interesting angle. Like, obviously we're having these vaccine mandates for a lot of companies, but that's got to be a tricky world to navigate for the employer themselves, right?
I would think all those questions would be directed to HR rather than confronting somebody yourself as an employee.
Yeah. All right. Does that answer your question, John?
That does. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Absolutely. 312-981-7200. Two for two, Jeffrey, with satisfied callers answering their questions. Please get your calls in, 312-981-7200. Okay, here is an interesting one. In Illinois, it is legal to consume cannabis, right? Cool for people that want to do it, whatever if you don't want, but it is legal. It is the law in the state. Can an employee still have a policy saying you can't use it and then fire you for it?
That's a complicated question.
Ooh, I like it. A good complicated one.
Complicated.
Here we go.
Complicated question. Well, there's a couple of laws that apply to this issue. One is the Illinois Cannabis and Regulation Act, and the other one is the Right to Privacy and Workplace Act. And essentially, what those two laws say is that an employer cannot fire you for using cannabis off the clock, but you can be fired or punished if you are high at work or if you test positive under a reasonable policy.
Okay, well, what do you mean by reasonable policy? Because THC can stay in your bloodstream, right, for like 30 days. And we get into this, too, about the driving well under the influence of marijuana. Interesting. You're nodding at me as if it's like, yes, it is ambiguous for a reason.
I think the biggest problem there, John, is that there is no accurate way to test whether or not somebody has used cannabis in a particular period of time. Those tests can say whether or not you have cannabis in your system, but they cannot say when or whether the person is impaired.
Interesting. I want to make sure I got this right. So a company in Illinois can no longer have a policy saying you can't use cannabis off the clock. Or are there certain exceptions for that?
I would think that a safety-sensitive position, somebody operating machinery, could probably fit under some requirements that would prohibit cannabis use. But generally speaking, under the law, companies cannot take adverse actions against employees for use during non-work hours. But they can take action based on having cannabis at work, or if they have regular drug testing policies and you test positive, they can take action. I do think we're expecting a law to come from the legislature that might clear some of this up, hopefully soon.
Yeah, because I imagine there's listeners out there that know someone who's been impacted in their employment by this exact thing, right? It's been, 9 months and 4 days? No, the law went into effect at the beginning of 2020, so it's been a year and 9 months now. So we're starting to see these cases, I imagine, pop up. 312-374-5305 if you want to reach Jeffrey. And I guess the cannabis law is sort of a microcosm of many things, Jeffrey. As the world changes and as laws change through our state legislature, you all have to learn. We have to navigate these waters together a little bit, because as laws change, so do employment laws, right?
Exactly. I think what you're seeing now is that a lot of employers are dropping the requirement of cannabis abstinence as a requirement for work. Recently, Amazon, which is the country's second largest employer, withdrew their requirement that workers not use cannabis. And very recently, the Cook County Public Defender's Office changed their requirements to stop prohibiting cannabis use from Cook County public defenders.
Boy, the cannabis laws are so interesting because it's still federally illegal. It's still labeled a class one narcotic, I believe. Unless it's changed recently, I haven't seen it, but I believe so. Boy, these are interesting waters to navigate. I'm glad we have someone like you to do it for us, Jeffrey.
I'm glad to be here, Jeff.
Yeah, 312-374-5305 is Jeffrey Colwin's number. Call him for information about employment law if you got any questions. You're going to stick around for the next half hour. Jeffrey, we're going to talk about non-compete rules here in Illinois. We're going to talk about privacy rights in the workplace. We're going to talk about social media and how you use that and how your employer can do that. So buckle up, Jeffrey. We still got a half hour to go. Okay.
Sounds great.
He's ready to go too. I am as well. 312-981-7200 is the number here at WGN. Let's get those questions in now. And we're up against the news here. Bob Kessler coming up here on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Now, normally this half hour is our final half hour, but today we get a bonus hour. We are on until 6 o'clock, and we're taking you right up to Texas Tech versus Houston, which you'll hear at 6 o'clock. So an extra hour of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And we're using it wisely here today. It's Labor Day weekend. Thanks for giving us part of your time to listen. And in honor of that, we've got an expert in employment law, Jeffrey Colwin, joining us from the firm Colwin, Mashapinto & Colwin. And Jeffrey, here we go. 312-981-7200 for your questions. I know I'm about to enter a very wide scope of our relationship with our employers, and that's our right to privacy, which is, I imagine, hard to navigate, right? Because your employers have to know certain things about you. They want to monitor certain things that you do maybe outside of the office. So this is a pretty wide range. What privacy rights do us as employees have, or does it really matter or depend on what your job is?
Well, everything matters based on what your job is.
Right.
But generally speaking, employees have very limited privacy rights when they're using their employer's equipment. Computers, your employer's smartphone, most of those devices can be monitored all the time, except for a few small instances relating to private calls.
So if you were sending emails that you shouldn't have been sending and the boss says, hey, we saw these emails, you have no recourse, essentially, most likely.
Most likely, if you're using your employer's equipment, it's not private.
That's a really good baseline, right? Like, if you are at the office, things that happen in the office, of course, the employers, have a purview over and the equipment they're using. Does it get a little bit more blurry on what you're doing on your private time on your own private phones and computers? I mean, they still have got to be somewhat interested in what you're doing and have some rights to know some of that, but What are the boundary lines there? If you're on your own time, you get to do whatever the heck you want?
Well, it's interesting. I read a recent survey that said about 87% of companies were relying on employees to use their personal smartphones for business. If all those employees are using their personal smartphones for business, then they are mixing confidential information, employer information, with their personal information. And that's where I think it gets tricky.
Yeah, well, right, because I've used my own phone for sending emails all the time. Should we not be doing that? Or is that up to the employers to provide us with the equipment to not do that?
It used to be the case that that was a perk, a benefit that you would get would be access to a device. Nowadays, employers are asking or requiring employees to use their own device. The recommendation that most people don't like to hear from me is don't mix your personal stuff with your work stuff. But I think maybe a more helpful piece of information would be this. Most employers who require these types of things have a bring your own device policy, BYOD policy.
Okay.
And if I were working for an employer that had such a requirement, I would look for that policy and figure out how do they determine which data is protected and which data is private.
Do they have to lay it out? I mean, and say, hey, it's if anything you do on Facebook, that is a private thing. Anything you do on Snapchat is private. any email that is not associated with our email or doesn't have, you know, our name at the end of it, at blank.com, is your own thing. Is that basically how those are usually lined up?
I think the best employers would have a policy that would make that perfectly clear, so there was no gray area. But there is not a requirement for an employer to have that policy. Generally, social media is a whole different kettle of fish.
Yes.
What you say and what you do on social media can be the basis of a discharge if the employer doesn't like the content of what you say. Except if you're talking about work issues, criticizing an employer for the purpose of communicating to other employees those circumstances.
Wait, we're going to slow down here. So wait, if I am the employer can terminate me or suspend me or whatever if I'm just posting something mean about the world, politically, getting too in deep, threatening someone else on Facebook. But you actually have protections if it's about the employer and what you're doing with other employees? Did I hear that completely wrong?
No, you heard it absolutely correct. The NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board, has protected what's called protected concerted activity. And that applies whether you're in a union or not in a union. And essentially, the question is, are you discussing work issues and criticizing employers about working conditions, or are you just complaining about your job without attempting to engage other employees?
Okay.
If it's the former, it's protected. If it's just complaining, it is typically not.
What about if it's not, you're just posting, it has nothing to do with work, right? Like you have a really far fringed opinion about something, or you criticize an official, not at work. Does that then come down to like what line of work you're in? And that is where you can run into trouble or not?
Always depends on what line of work you're in, John. But I would say it like this. Government, state employees have a First Amendment right to say basically anything they want on social media to a certain degree. Private employees who work for private employers do not. So what that means is if an employer doesn't like your politics or your social posting, they can, in many circumstances, take action based on what you say privately.
Well, what about police and fire departments? Those would fall under state or government employees?
Those are government employees for the most part, and they have additional protections that private employees don't.
That's interesting, because we have seen cases where police officers and firefighters might say something about their jobs or not about their jobs, and people, you know, we trust the police or are meant to trust the police in certain things, but that they are afforded protection to be able to say what they want and be protected from termination.
The question really rises in that circumstance. Is the individual speaking as a private citizen? Or are they speaking in their capacity as a government employee? If they're speaking as a private citizen on a matter of public concern, generally speaking, that's protected. If they're speaking in their official capacity or as a part of their job, even if they're a government employee, then that would not be protected.
Can employees videotape us at work and monitor our productivity no matter where we are? That was a question from the 630.
Yes. Well, generally speaking, they can in certain circumstances. They can monitor areas for safety. They can monitor areas for productivity. What they can't do is monitor to you with video in private spaces, like locker rooms
right.
or sometimes break rooms. And generally speaking, the videotaping is limited to just visual, not audio recording. That would be prohibited by eavesdropping laws.
Oh, really? So they couldn't, like, if I'm talking about my boss at my desk quietly to my friend, as long as they didn't overhear it, like, just by passing by, they cannot record that and say, look at what you said about the boss.
Generally speaking, here in Illinois, it's a two-party consent state, so if they cannot record you illegally. Now, if the employer says, I'm going to be recording everybody, and by working here, you are consenting to being recorded, then all bets are off.
Right. And that's important. And that goes for videotaping too, I imagine, right?
Generally speaking, most employers will notify their employees in advance that all this is happening to establish consent.
It's interesting that all these, I mean, obviously workplaces have to have these rules and regulations and it has to be spelled out. But I imagine employers have to battle this idea of, okay, that's our policy. But in this day of social media where we can find out what a company is doing and the general public finds that to be overreaching, employers have to kind of navigate those waters too. It's the onus is on them to not only, especially if they're selling a product that that we all want. You don't want to hear that company XYZ is monitoring their every word that their employees are saying. So for employers, that's they have to navigate that too.
Yes, employers are limited by the laws and by social circumstances in which those laws exist.
312-981-7200 is our number if you have any employment questions for Jeffrey Colwin. If you want to reach him, 312-374-5305. We'll continue our conversation after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. This is not a segment about meat thermometers, though. We're talking about employment law with Jeffrey Colwin. 312-374-5305 is his number. Our number is 312-981-7200. You probably know that. Let's get some last-minute questions in here. Let's talk about your personnel file. First of all, Jeffrey, what is a personnel file? And do I get to see, as the employee, what is in that?
A personnel file is a collection of documents that an employer keeps recording your background and sometimes your employment history, things like reviews or write-ups or discipline. It is up to an employer to decide what information to keep in that file. But the important thing to know is that we have a law here in Illinois that allows employees the right to request to review their personnel file twice per year during employment and up to 1 year after they've left employment.
So what is the advantage of doing that? So I might just say, well, what's in there? I probably know what's in there. I get my review every couple of months or every year. I know what it's going to say.
Well, you work for a good employer. I think
I do. Thanks, WGN.
I think it's important to check and see what's in your personnel file because sometimes there are errors. Sometimes there are corrections, and I've been litigating these types of cases for over 20 years. On occasion, I have found employers who put different information in a personnel file than they've given to the employee.
Can that be used to bolster a case of employment discrimination or something like that?
I would definitely try to do so.
Do you get to look at it? Can you make copies and keep it at home?
Under the law, you can make a copy. Your employer is allowed to charge you for the copy. But yes, you can take a copy of your personnel file at
home. The 5 cents, you mean? Like the nickel of the piece of paper? Or can they give you a fee or something like that?
Well, they can't charge you for the service, but they can charge you for the copy. So okay. Is that what a copy costs these days?
I don't
5 cents?
What do the copy cost these days? Just send me a PDF. That's what I want.
Those are free.
All right. Well then, Jeffrey, my question is, even if you're a model employee or you feel really like you have a great relationship with your employer, I guess wouldn't it be good practice to get it every twice a year and just put it in a folder somewhere?
I think it's good practice to, on occasion, take a look at what's in your personnel file and make sure you have a copy of it, because you never know when you might need it in the future.
Absolutely. And for anyone that's been let go within the last year or they left their job, they can still get it then. We had a question from the 847. We're going to backtrack a little bit about recording people. And this person wants to know, can an employee record coworkers who they think are violating company policy and company safety rules?
The answer is generally no.
Right.
Here in Illinois, you need two-party consent to record. That means that everybody who is on the recording knows about it and is consenting to it. And if you make a recording like that and you don't have full consent, it's a crime.
Yeah. And the A4, it's a great question, though, because I think a lot of people that maybe are like, I can't believe this person's doing that. First of all, they should probably just go to HR and tell them, right, directly.
Generally speaking, yes. There is one important exception, though, to that law. And that is if you think the recording is going to produce evidence of a crime.
Okay.
If you think that by recording somebody, you have a reasonable belief that you will obtain evidence of a crime, that recording is exempted from the statute. It's a narrow exemption, and you need to be careful, but it is an exemption.
Interesting. We also had a question about recording. Can an employee record a disciplinary meeting? So let's say they're called in, they did something wrong, the employer's there, they want that for their records. Is it the same thing that the employer has to say yes and agree to it?
I think that would be the wise move, would be to get consent from the party you're meeting with and ask to make a recording. In my experience, I don't know many employers who would permit that type of activity, but if you ask and they allow you, then I would recommend it.
Heck yeah. I would want that recording no matter what. I'm someone who takes like frivolous notes during meetings because I forget everything that ever happened. But my handwriting, Jeffrey, is so bad. I'll even show you. This says John on it and it just looks like chicken scratch. I can prove it to you. Yeah, I would love to. But yeah, you got to get your consent. So you can't just hit record and put it in your suit pocket. That would, again, violate that rule.
Not in Illinois.
Okay, good to know. Let's see. I had another non-compete rules. right? A lot of people, and we've heard about this, not only when you hear non-compete, we think of someone maybe in my line of work, right? You work for media. We have those in many of our contracts. But we've heard from cases from like fast food employees who have been told they have non-compete rules. Are those legal here in Illinois?
They are legal under certain circumstances. I think it was back in 2016, Illinois passed a law that prohibited non-competes for folks who were making $13 an hour or less. Just recently, Governor Pritzker signed an amendment to the Illinois Freedom to Work Act, which greatly expanded the prohibitions against non-competes and non-solicitation agreements. Starting in January of 2022, it's unlawful for a non-compete agreement to exist for employees earning less than $75,000 per year.
So if you make under $75,000, they cannot tell you, if you leave here, you have to wait 6 months before you go to a similar place.
Generally speaking, that would be prohibited, correct?
And I've often heard this kind of off the cuff, even for employees that make more than that. I mean, the company would still have to go through litigation to sue you for that, right? And they don't always win.
That's true. For a non-compete or a non-solicitation agreement to be enforceable, the business usually has to have a legitimate reason for protecting that type of work. And if they can't justify why the non-compete is legitimate, then it would not be enforceable.
And the onus is on them to prove that.
Well, they would be the ones suing in that instance, and yes.
Okay. That was an example of a dumb question already, and write that down. Mark that there. 312-91-7200. Last question here for you. It's a three-day weekend, so let's talk. By the way, Chicago has a very rich history about why Labor Day is the way it is. We're going to talk a little bit about it as I fill it on Chicago's Afternoon News on Monday. Vacation time. So many employees have policies about if you don't use them by this day, they're gone forever. Are those legal policies to have? What is the vacation time rules as you see them here in the state of Illinois?
Well, Illinois does not per se prohibit a use it or lose it vacation policy.
Okay.
As long as the employee has notice that if they don't use it, they're going to lose it. And as long as the employee has a reasonable opportunity to take that vacation, then the policy can be enforceable. What an employer in Illinois cannot do is change the vacation policy after you've already earn time that you're expecting to take with you.
So if you have it in the bank, let's say, they can't say, okay, we've changed our policy, now you have to use it by the end of the year and you only have a month left to use it. No, you are entitled to use that time.
Generally speaking, that's correct.
And if you're let go, is vacation time something they have to pay you for if you've accrued it over time?
If there's not a use it or lose it policy, then yes, they would have to give you that vacation time as a part of your separating wages.
And then you can get your personnel file. There's a lot of rules for you. Jeffrey Colwin, we're out of time. That number again, 312-374-5305. I think you helped a lot of folks out. Hopefully come back again. Okay, Jeffrey?
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me here. And thanks for making the law so much more accessible to everybody. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. That's what we try and do here. Let's get legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. News from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is next after this.